Hello and welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Alana Glatt, and today we will be studying Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph, Chapter 11. Picking up where we left off last, Shaul has now officially been anointed as the first king of Israel, and a public lottery drawn before all of Am Yisrael and Mitzvah confirmed that Shaul was indeed Hashem's choice for this lofty position. We saw how, despite all of this, Shaul was still pretty hesitant to accept this mighty role, and he hid in the communal coat closet in a last effort to avoid this honor. But once the Urim V'Tumim confirmed yet another time, and a determined group of people came to find him, Shaul finally stepped out and into this grand role, hovering head and shoulders above all of the people. At this point, most of the Bnei Yisrael excitedly accepted Shaul as their king, calling out excitedly, Yechi HaMelech, long live the king. Except for a small group of Bnei Belial, a small group of skeptics, who mocked Shaul and his kingship and refused to accept him as their leader. This detail will be extremely relevant for our Perek and discussion today. In our Perek today, we'll now watch Shaul rise up to his majestic new role, rushing to the defense of the Jewish people, and proving himself a mighty war general and a passionate leader, truly deserving to be the king of Israel. We will also watch this miraculous victory prompt Shmuel Hanavi to regather all of the Bnei Israel and to re-coronate Shaul as king of Israel for a second time, this time accepted and recognized by all. Perek Yud Aleph, our story for today, opens up with an evil king by the name of Nachash, the leader of Ammon, coming out and attacking a peaceful Jewish city in the portion of Menasheh by the name of Yavish Gilad. Yavish Gilad was a quiet city on the Cross Jordan on the east bank of Israel, where the 2.5 Shvatim, the 2.5 tribes, Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Sheva Menasheh, where they lived, and where the Ammonim were hostile neighbors to their south. The people of Yavish Gilad were extremely frightened by their enemies, and they begged them to please make a peace treaty instead of attacking them, instead of attacking us, please. They offered to pay them taxes and to act as their servants, just in exchange for safety. This was a common occurrence we saw repeat itself many times in Sefer Shoftim. Local Shvatim were attacked, and knowing they likely didn't have such a big chance of galvanizing enough people from Bnei Israel to help fight, they'd surrender in the hopes of achieving relative calm, relative peace. Pasuk Bet, by Nachash, the Ammoni leader, whose very name made clear what kind of cunning and evil ruler he truly was, like a nefarious snake. He answered them. He said, okay, you want to make a pact with us? You want to make a peace treaty with us? Fine, we'll make peace with you, but on one condition. All you need to do is poke out the right eye of every single person in your city, humiliating your entire city and the entire Jewish people, as they will have to sit back and watch this horror occur. Then, and only then, will we make peace with you. Pasuk Gimel. The elders of Yavish are extremely shaken by this unprecedented request. They're not 100% certain what's best to do here. How do they respond to Nachash? What should they do? And so they quickly look at each other. They turn to Nachash and they ask him, please give us 7 days' time to attempt to maybe send messengers throughout the territory of Israel. And if no one comes to help us, no one comes to our aid, then we're going to surrender fully to you. Nachash agrees to this request. He's pretty certain that there's no chance that they're going to succeed. And so the people quickly galvanize each other. They run to pull together some messengers in an attempt to try and send out a huge SOS to their brothers and sisters and the rest of Eretz Yisrael. Rashi offers us some interesting perspective here as to why Nachash would make such an incredibly cruel and strange demand, like cutting out the right eye of an entire city's population. He explains that when Nachash made this request, he was actually telling them to bring him a Torah scroll, which was given by the right hand of Hashem, so that he could publicly burn it for all to see. Why did Nachash want to do that? Because he knew that written in the Torah is the prohibition for a Jew to marry a man from Ammon or from Moab. And so he wanted to publicly burn that Torah and humiliate the very nation who stood by that. Just to give a little bit more context as to why there's such a prohibition, The B'nai Israel are not allowed to marry Ammoni men because, as the Torah tells us in Sefer Devarim 23:5, the Ammonim are considered an ungrateful people. The people of Ammon, they were descendants of Lot, whose very life was saved by Avram Avinu. Yet later, when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim and were in need of food and some drink on their journey, the Ammonim refused to offer the B'nai Israel food when they passed their land. Because of the deep-seated bad character of the Ammonim, Hashem did not want the Jewish people to marry them. And what's interesting here, Nachash, with his kind of cruelty here, he most certainly proved that the Torah had good reason to forbid marriage with Ammon after all. He was as cruel as his ancestors were. Pesukim Dalet through Hey tell us that the messengers, distraught, they now come to Givat Sha'ul and they tell over this horrible, terrible news to all the people there. And the people are in complete shock from what they hear. And they start immediately screaming and crying out. And just then, as the people are screaming and crying and not sure what to do with themselves, Sha'ul HaMelech himself comes in from the field behind his oxen. It's interesting to note that even though he was anointed king, he was still involved in regular mundane errands at this point in time. And Sha'ul sees everyone's faces and he asks them, what's the matter? What's going on here? Why is everyone here crying? What is wrong? And so they tell him about the terrible predicament that the people of Yavesh Gilead themselves are facing. Pasuk Vav tells us, "Vatitzlach ruach Elokim al Sha'ul kishamo et hadvarim ha'ela vayichar apo me'od." The spirit of Hashem gripped Sha'ul when he heard these things, and he became extremely angry. Zion. So what did Sha'ul do? He took a pair of oxen. He cut them into pieces, which he sent with messengers throughout the entire land of Israel to every single town, saying, "Whoever does not go out after Sha'ul and Shmuel to battle, then he will have his own herd of cattle cut up into many pieces like this." And the Pesukim tell us that a fear of Hashem fell upon the people, and they went forth united as one man. Here Sha'ul was gifted with courage and with strength from Hashem himself. And he rises up like a ferocious lion with passion and fervor to save those from his nation who are in trouble. He also does so to set a precedent of the type of leader he's going to be. Notably, only when he has Hashem's help, he's going to try and strive to be a decisive and capable leader. A line I saw written in the Little Midrash says actually captures this scene so eloquently. It says that the cut up pieces of meat would remind B'nai Israel that if we are cut up and split apart, then we are dead meat. We cannot accomplish anything. But if we unite, then we can win. How timely that message is for us in this generation. There's nothing that can stop us when we are united. The imagery of Sha'ul cutting up these two animals and sending it out in pieces to all of the Shvatim also brings up very vivid imagery from an incident still pretty fresh in our minds from the end of Sefer Shoftim, namely the incident of Pilagesh Bagiva. There are many parallels between the two stories here, with the people of Yavesh Gilead playing a prominent role in both, and here, with cutting up the animals and sending them around in this way, Sha'ul is almost rectifying the sin of the people there by rallying them up and uniting them, this time to become one united front against their enemy. The last time B'nai Israel were unified in this type of way was actually precisely when they galvanized against the men of Binyamin in response to the unfortunate tragic story of Pilagesh Bagiva. So here, with this vividly despicable imagery that Sha'ul here is conjuring up and uniting them together against a foreign enemy, he was truly providing a tikkun for that horrible scene, which also, interesting to note, deeply personally affected Sha'ul, as he was one of the few surviving families from that event, as Sha'ul came from the tribe of Binyamin. Our story continues onwards, though. Pesukim Chet and Tet tell us that Sha'ul now gathers all of the B'nai Israel, all of the people in Bezek, and he counts them. According to Rashi, he did so by collecting little pebbles from each of them, and he counted those up. And the count comes out, 300,000 men come from across the B'nai Israel, and also 30,000 men from Yehuda, who are generally counted separately. This is a huge gathering of all the B'nai Israel under one king. The messengers are then told to go back to the people of Yavesh Gilad and to tell them that you have nothing to worry about. Do not worry. Tomorrow, you're going to experience a true Yeshua, a huge, great salvation, before the sun even turns hot. And when the people of Yavesh Gilad hear this news, they're overjoyed. They rejoice. Baruch Hashem, they can't even believe it. Wow, thank God, we're going to be saved from this horrible, horrible, tricky situation that we find ourselves in. And so the people of Yavesh Gilad quickly return back. They go to Nachash, and as a decoy, they tell him that tomorrow, Nachash, you'll be able to do with us whatever it is that you desire. Meanwhile, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Shaul splits the people into three groups. He galvanizes them together, and they emerge upon the Ammonim that next day, just as he said that they would. And they manage with strength and commitment and bravery. They manage to completely strike down the entire camp of Ammon before the day even becomes hot. It was a complete victory. The Psukim tell us that there didn't even remain two surviving men who could stand one next to the other. The people here were truly overwhelmed. They were impressed by Shaul's bravery, his ability to unify the B'nai Israel in this way. This was an absolutely miraculous and powerful victory, and the B'nai Israel are all on a high. And so, in that feeling, that elation of Shaul HaMelech, our great leader who we have now with us, a group of people come to Shmuel in Pasuk Yud Bet, and they ask him, "Did you see this incredible leader that we have? Do you remember that there was a group of men who disregarded Shaul and his kingship at the very beginning when he was first anointed?" A story which we mentioned yesterday. And they turn to Shmuel and they say, "Let's kill them for disrespecting the king. This king, he's all capable. He's incredible. How could they have disrespected him in that way?" But Shaul himself, he intercedes. He jumps in and he tells them, "Let's not put a damper on this miraculous day of victory. Hashem just helped us to smite down our enemies with such force and such power. Let's just enjoy this victory. There's no need to mar this day and put anyone to death. Just leave it." And our parak concludes with the final two psukim, Yudalet and Tetvav. Shmuel, now seizing the momentum of this incredible victory and realizing how proud the people are of their leader Shaul, he now gathers up all the people at a place known as Gilgal, a place that was holy and sacred from the time that the Aron was there when Yehoshua first entered into Eretz Yisrael. And Shaul is now reestablished as the king of Israel a second time, this time with all of the B'nai Israel in agreement, and Shaul and the people were extremely happy. Shaul truly grabbed this opportunity in today's story to rise up to the very leadership he had first tried to run from. And with the unique strength and courage imbued to him from Hashem himself, he managed to truly galvanize the B'nai Israel, uniting them in a way we haven't seen in B'nai Israel for quite some time. But I just want to end off our learning today with one quick question to think about. Our parak today, we learned, was a true high note for Shaul and for his kingship and for the B'nai Israel as a whole. But was Shaul right here at the end of our parak in choosing to forego his honor and forgive the group of B'nai Belial, the skeptics who had publicly mocked and doubted him? Was he right in dismissing the people's comments and leaving today as a national day of victory? Or should he maybe have dealt with them in a harsher or more hands-on way? The Gemara in Yoma, Daf Chaf Bet Amud Beis, 22b, actually criticizes Shaul for this very incident and for not acting harsher with the group of skeptics who spoke against him. Why? Wasn't Shaul righteous? Doesn't this show incredible, impeccable midos on his part? Because although it's true that on a personal level, we should always strive to work on our own midot and to forgive other people, and there's great merit in achieving self-mastery and not responding back when faced with adversity, a king is not like any other ordinary person. A king is supposed to represent, and he does represent, Hashem. And as such, if someone is disrespectful to a king, it's as though he's disrespecting Hashem. And therefore, by ignoring the insults being thrown at him, Shaul failed to think globally here. On an individual level, he was righteous, and his midot are impeccable. But failing to realize that he no longer represents just himself and his brand, He now represents and stands for the king, Hashem himself. That was something that Shaul didn't properly take into account. We're going to hopefully continue to watch this idea closely as we continue to learn more about Shaul and his ensuing leadership as king. Will he stand as the strong, direct representative of Hashem himself? Or will he allow himself to be swayed by the people and their opinions as he continues to lead them? Lots of food for thought as we continue our study of Sefer Shmuel together in Meretz Hashem. Thank you so much for learning this parak together. Wishing everyone a beautiful day. Today's parak is dedicated to the safety and peace of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. May the words of Nach uplift us and give us strength during these challenging times.